This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is that time, everybody, here with Wyman and Bob. We talk to them every single week. Great baseball conversations coming your way when we bring this guy to the table. He's joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. The best in the business, Mike Blowers, is here. How are you, man?
Doing good. Long road trip ahead of us, and we're going to get started here tonight. Good talking to you guys.
Yeah, it's. I keep doing the countdown with Dave every day going, can you believe there are only 20 games left? Can you believe we're going to be in the teens? We're going to be in single digits. It's. Have you been able to have fun with the season in a way? For me as a fan and being in the media, it's I don't want the season to end. It's been that much fun for me, and I look forward to these games so much every single night. Have you been able to sort of step back and really enjoy what's been happening, or are you two in the moment?
No, I have enjoyed it. I think that the main thing for me is just watching this club and watching them evolve into the team that they're in right now, the way that they're playing right now, the way things are going for them right now. You never know early in the season how this thing's going to come together. And we've talked about it throughout the season this year that the pitching and the defense basically held them together. And now the offense is rolling. They're hitting the ball out of the ballpark. It's taken some time for that to gel for them, but the timing for it is perfect right now. And they've weathered the storm of a tough part of their schedule again, and now things have turned around. And really, everything's in their hands right now, so it's up to them. But I think with the way that they've been pitching and hitting the ball out of the ballpark, they're in pretty good shape.
Basically, what Bob is saying, Mike, is that he wants you to go back out on the road for another 2 months.
That's
and extend
exactly
the
right.
season.
That's exactly right.
Why do you hate
Mike
Blowers?
I'll say this. This is the last road trip of the regular season, and I hope to go out on the road a few more times after this for sure.
That says go. He's having fun because we know he doesn't love the road.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'd rather be at home, but these guys are playing well, and this is going to be fun, and I love the way that they're going about their business. And you know what? It's a great group of guys, too, with the way that they play and the way they've come together as a team and the way that they have fun. You don't hear any complaining from them at all. Even when things weren't going particularly well, they hung in there. They're a good group to really cheer for and to watch play every day.
Well, and it's so much more of a grind for baseball than for football. But I remember in 2019, I was, traveling with the team, and the Niners got upset, and it was on the TV on the plane. And so the plane's getting ready to take off, and everybody's, pounding on the overhead bins and cheering and screaming, and it's just so fun to be around. So that's got to be pretty cool for you. Is that kind of what you're experiencing? Can you feel something different with this team when you travel with them?
Yeah, I mean, traveling wise, the players are towards the front of the plane, then you have the coaching staff in the middle, and us, we're in the back of the plane, and it's pretty loud in the front of the plane. I can tell you that the guys are having a great time. It was yesterday too, as it should be. This is, you work so hard basically for the first 5 months to put yourself in a position going into September where you have something to play for, and they certainly have done that, and you may as well enjoy it, and they certainly are. And I like their chances. I mean, I don't see them getting uptight about anything, really. So I think that they're anxious to continue to play. I think they'll play well over these next 20 games, and hopefully they'll get that first wild card spot and see what happens from there.
One of the more amazing things, and I think it absolutely speaks to the strength of the defense, the pitching, relief, and starting, is the fact that we had so many guys coming into the season, Mike, that we talked about, that we were sort of counting on to carry the load offensively, and very few have stepped up to do that for various reasons. I mean, Kyle Lewis dealing with injury, you've gotten nothing from him. Jared Kelnick, you've gotten nothing there. Mitch Haniger played 9 games and then missed the majority of the season. Jesse Winker hasn't really produced. Frazier has been very up and down. I mean, you look at it, J.P. Crawford, kind of a down year, yet here they are, and they're on pace to surpass last year's 90 win total. I mean, it's just, for me, it speaks to the pitching and sort of the timely nature of the hitting, even guys who are struggling, much like last year, coming up with huge moments.
Yeah, there's definitely all of that that you're talking about, Bob, but you also, I think, to get to this position with 20 games remaining and to be in the hunt for this thing, you have to have some guys also step up and have a special season to put you there. And I think that they've had that. When you look at George Kirby and what he has done in the rotation, when you look at some of the guys out in the bullpen, Munoz, for example, Penn Murphy, guys that you didn't know what to expect from them stepping up. Then you look at what Suarez has done, especially over the last month. He's been unbelievable, month and a half, really. And the contributions that you get from the other guys, the younger guys, which we've talked about, you have to have those guys go out and have special seasons, and they've had that from enough of the guys to put them in the position that they're in right now, along with contributions from other guys that you talked about. Because every team's going to have injuries, and every team's going to have a guy or two that's going to have a down year. But you have to have other guys that really step up, and they certainly have had that. Julio's been unbelievable. That certainly has helped also.
Hey, Mike, we have a guy, Brandon, son of Augustafson, here in the station that does a good job with stats and thing. He pointed out to me today that Cal Raleigh in defensive wins above replacement is number two as a catcher. He's also pointing out the fact that those guys spend a lot of time working with, you know, the pitchers. And so for that reason, do catchers not necessarily get a lot of time in the batting cage because of that, or are they getting as much as everybody else?
They get as much as everybody else, but obviously, you know, what they're doing with the pitchers takes away probably from their concentration time, because that's their priority, is to get these guys. Tonight it'll be Robbie Ray. Cal will have to get him through seven innings strong tonight and then work the bullpen the rest of the way. That's his priority. And then I think also for Cal, it's just a young player that's trying to find his way. You mentioned the numbers defensively. He's been terrific behind the plate. He's leading catchers in home runs, which has been outstanding. His at-bats have been better as the season has moved on, and I think that's just some growth for him. And as he moves forward in his career, he'll figure out a way, I think, to where he can be a more consistent hitter along with the power that he has and continue to do a great job behind the plate, but it takes a little bit of time. And I think for catchers especially, it just takes more time for those guys to kind of find their way because they have so much on their plate on a daily basis, and especially for Cal now. I mean, Cal played in the day game the other day after a night game. He's going to be in there as much as possible the rest of the way. And that puts a lot of pressure on him also, just the physical toll that he goes through and the beating he takes every day. I have a lot of respect for catchers that find a way to hit. And typically they're bigger, stronger guys, and that's certainly Cal.
You think if Julio weren't on the team this year, we'd be talking about George Kirby as at least being in the conversation for Rookie of the Year? I feel like he's wildly overshadowed. I am so blown away by what he's been able to do. He's got a sub-3 ERA. The guy does not walk anybody by, Mike, at this level, dealing with these hitters, with the eye that they have, and it's just a different world for a pitcher. And to watch that command, the way he controls the strike zone, to me, is beyond impressive.
He's special for a young pitcher, and a pitcher that is going to be in the mid to upper 90s with his velo and the command of strike zone the way that he does. He can fall behind hitters. He can fall behind Trout tonight, and he won't give in to him with just throwing him a fastball. He can throw his breaking ball for a strike, use his changeup to Ohtani when he wants to. He's a difference maker for them. They've had to be really careful for obvious reasons, the longevity of the young man's career, but what he's done on the mound this year has been outstanding, and I don't think I've ever seen anything like it as far as his command goes from such a young pitcher as far as his experience goes, and you're probably right. Julio is stealing the show for good reason. He certainly deserved it. He's earned it. But George has been a real key to this club this year, and it'll be a great matchup tomorrow with him and Ohtani going out. I'm looking forward to that.
21 starts, Dave and Mike. 21 starts, 14 walks total.
Yeah.
111 yeah. in two-thirds innings. 14. I'm blown away by the kid.
You know what's amazing to me about it is when he was drafted, that was the thing for him, right? He didn't walk anybody in college, and he certainly did in the minor leagues. But then all of a sudden, his velo jumped up, which is what you typically see with a lot of these young guys, and that hasn't hurt his command at all. So he's not overthrowing to get his velocity to throw a pitch 95 to 97. It's natural for him, and he's still able to command it, which is unusual.
We still talk about the three-game rotation that it'd possibly be Kirby, Ray, and Castillo. But Marco making a little bit of a case at the end, or Logan Gilbert. It would be nice if at the end of this you really had to, you know, sort of labor over who are the three guys you're going to put out there. But do you see any evidence that Marco is possibly playing his, or pitching his way into possibly being that in that little three-man rotation there?
Well, we've talked about it. We talked about it last week, I believe, and I think some of it's going to come down to matchups also. So we'll have to wait and see. I think with what George has done this year, you definitely have to look at him. But, I mean, Logan Gilbert also, what he has done, he kind of hit that little bit of a lull, kind of that dead period for a period of time for him this year. But he's bounced back nicely, and the other day he was, 97, 99 miles an hour. He's thrown the ball exceptionally well also. So I think, Scott, it's a nice problem for him to have. But I think it's going to come down to some of the matchups of where they're at, or maybe depending on where they want George to go as far as innings and who he's going to be up against. You might have those other guys come in behind him. There's a lot of options for Scott right now, which for the Mariners is great news.
How about Marco, just as a man? He's up for the Roberto Clemente Award, and just what you've seen from him over the years, and you know what that being up for that award means to him and the kind of guy that he is.
Yeah, well, obviously, community is important to him. He's always talked about that. He's a pro's pro. He goes about his business. He's one of the guys, especially in today's game, when everything is about velocity and spin rate, pitching at the top of the zone, all these different things that you see on a nightly basis. He's different. I mean, his fastball is going to be 89. He can touch 91, but he's 89 miles an hour. Command is critical for him. His changeup typically is his best pitch on a given night, especially when he gets into trouble. He mixes it up. But he competes, man. He competes like crazy for me. I think that there's been stretches for him. We saw some of it last year. We've seen some of it this year. When he has his command rolling, he can get deep into a ball game also. And he wants to be out there. He's not afraid of the moment at all. He's just a pro's pro. And I think that he really complements this rotation. I think when you look at all the different pieces that they have in the rotation, he's really a nice fit for them, especially in some of the teams that are going to be ultra aggressive. He gets a lot of quick outs in those situations, but community has always been a big part of Marco. And I got really lucky. I think it was in his first, maybe his second year, I went on one of the winter caravans with him and got to talk to him quite a bit. We went into Gonzaga, and that was really important to him too. It was really cool though to see how everybody reacted to him coming back to that school. So the Pacific Northwest means a lot to him, and you know, for him to get the Roberto Clemente Award is awesome for any player, and I think he's certainly deserving.
Hey, Mike, looking at Mitch and Ty France, you know, both dealing with different injuries, and hopefully Mitch will be back in the lineup. But if you just look at their game logs the past couple of months, more specifically Ty the past 2 months, and then September's been rough for Mitch, do you attribute all of those struggles to physical ailments? We know, you know, Mitch with the back situation, I'm not exactly sure when that started. But Ty with the wrist, just very uncharacteristic when you look at the numbers for those two guys, specifically Ty France. Is it all, do you think it's all attributed to the injuries?
I think that part of it's the longevity of the season, and you're going to have some dips. I don't care who you are, what type of player you are. You're going to have periods where you go through a rough 2 weeks at a time. And I think that's part of it. The other part of it is when you get deeper into the season and you are dealing with an injury, it gets tougher to go about your business and maybe have the same thought process and react the same way that you normally would. But hey, man, it's the big leagues, and that's part of it. You work your way through it, and we talk about it a lot, especially for younger players. Mitch obviously has been through it a number of times, but for Ty, we forget that he's still a young player at the major league level, and he's trying to work his way through it like a lot of other younger players, and it's just part of the process that you go through because, and you mentioned it earlier, you guys, about the longevity of the season. These guys play every day, and going out there and playing with aches and pains and different injuries is just part of the process, and you go as long as you can, as hard as you can. And they obviously need both of those guys in the lineup. They are important. If nothing else, it lengthens out the lineup, and it gives the other team something else to think about, even if they're in those periods where they're struggling a little bit for whatever the reasons may be.
Mike, have you thought about what their record needs to be from here on out? I think, Bob, you said 14-6.
I don't know that it needs it. I just thought that's what they would do.
You thought that's what they would do. Yeah, my thing was, I just hope it's not that they have to win six in a row at the end, you know. But have you thought about have you looked at these series, or are you just taking them one at a time?
For me, I'm looking at the series for them to win the series. If they win their series the rest of the way, and when you look at Toronto and you're looking at Tampa Bay, even if you want to consider Baltimore at this point, those guys are going to beat each other up. I think their schedule is going to be really difficult for them, and I just have a hard time believing that one of those teams is going to get really hot with what they're up against. So I think if the Mariners continue to just win series, which is something that Scott talks about all the time, they're going to be in pretty good shape. They obviously have these four games against the Angels. It's not going to be easy. Trout's back in the lineup. He has been hot. Otani is going to pitch tomorrow. He's going to be in the lineup every day. So those guys can cause you some problems in a four-game set. But I think if they win series, they're going to be in great shape.
Hey, you know, Blo, we were talking about the rule changes coming up and just trying to speculate how big of an impact is it truly going to have, specifically the elimination of the shift. And are we going to see averages go up, and who does this really favor and things like that? And I guess it'll be individual, you know, pole hitters versus guys like Ty France that use the whole field. But what's your expectation? Are we overselling it? Do you think it's going to be dramatic, or do you think it's going to be a blip?
I think that teams put the shift on for a reason. And I think if you take that away from them, it has to help the clubs offensively. And that's kind of what they want. They want more action. They want more base runners. So I think it has to be a difference maker as far as the offenses go. Otherwise, they wouldn't be shifting to begin with. And when you know, I can think about it when they first started shifting a little bit, and then it started going to where every team started to do it, and then they started doing it all the time. They're doing it for a reason, because it works. And I think that'll make a big difference for the guys offensively.
Any of the other ones that you think are – I like the pitch clock thing. I don't know how much that messes with a pitcher's rhythm. We see some guys who are very deliberate in their delivery, but ultimately I think that's a huge benefit, but I'm not a pitcher. What do you think of that?
I think, you know, it's going to be uncomfortable for the not only the pitchers, but even for the hitters, because they have to be back in that batter's box in a certain amount of time too. If I remember, I think they have 8 seconds to go for the pitcher, and those guys have to be ready to hit. So it's going to bother some of those guys that are in there, especially when you get late in games and things are on the line and these guys are thinking a lot about what's happening and what their process is, that everything kind of slows down in those moments. That's not going to be the case anymore. So I think it's going to affect a number of the pitchers, but obviously the hitters also.
How nice is it going to be to, at the end of the season, not have Bob and I just pepper you with questions for 20 minutes?
I'm going to call him. I'm going to text him and call him.
Yeah, can we get your number, Mike? You know?
Well, actually, Dave, to tell the truth, it's not just these calls, but there's times in game where all of a sudden I'll get a text message from Bob over there wondering what's going on also.
Let's be honest.
Don't kid yourself. It's not a once-a-week thing with Bob.
Okay. Usually it's something praise, like, hey, great call, or you nailed that one. It's generally like that, but yeah, he's right.
Blowers is saying, okay, lose my number, pal.
No, I appreciate it. He's right. He's right about that, but it's just funny. But it's great talking to you guys all the time, you know, and we're continuing to do it throughout the postseason too, so it'll be a lot of fun, and hopefully these guys go deep into the playoffs this year. I think that as far as the wild card goes, they're in really good shape. It's just a matter of what position they're in at this point. And, you know, it's one of those things. You look at the schedule, it's all right in front of them. And as an athlete, somebody that's trying to do something, you want to have it in your own hands, and it's right there for them. We'll see what they do over the next 20 games.
Yeah, here's to hoping you spend more time on the road with this team this year than you have in the past two decades. Let me tell you this.
This is my 16th year, and I'm looking forward to the postseason for the first time, and I hope that they go all the way on this thing, because it'll be a lot of fun. And I know, even though the way it's been now, the last few homestands, the way the fans have reacted to this club, going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if nothing else, it'll keep Bob entertained, so that's a good thing.
Mike, we love you. We appreciate it. Have fun on the road trip, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, guys. We'll talk to you later. See you.
There you go. There's Mike Blowers. And I don't pepper him with statements during the game very often. Usually it's praise.
I like how he called you out there.
Yeah. He's like, I mean, it's happened a time or two where it'll be sort of like you in the press box, like, hey, what was that? What was he thinking? Why would you do that?
Yeah, I had somebody coach me up one time when I was on TV during the broadcast. It was like, yeah, you're being really monotone. You need to pick it up and everything.
Who said that?
Somebody.
Like sent you a text?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
During the game, the broadcast.
They say, stop sweating so much.
Yeah, stop sweating so much. Yeah, I don't critique Blowers. It'll be more of a, what the heck happened on that play?
Yeah.
Well, you know, more about the game. I'm not going, dude, you need to pick up your pace here. You need to, no. No, I don't offer critiques for his work. It's more about,
Mike doesn't seem like a guy that's very effusive with the texts and the social media and things like that.
No, it's not his world.
Yeah,
it's not his world.
I get it.
By the way, somebody sent me something on Twitter that I just showed you that was very representative of what I was going through this morning.
A guy was, what were his lines? Something for justice?
Yeah, he said, something. I'm a roadblock for justice, right. And not all heroes wear capes.
Everybody's honking at him, and
he was in the same city. He's in a lane that has just stopped, that's turning, and he's got these cars that are trying to merge in next to him, but it's not a merge. It's not, they're in a straight ahead lane, but they're just trying to say, well, I'm not going to wait in this line. I'll just move to the front of it and then just dart in front of somebody. And he's like, nope. It's not how you have to play by the bleeping rules.
I did that the other day when I was trying to turn in to get into over at Lumen Field. It was the mock game, and I went to the front, but I didn't realize. So there was a lady next to me, and I rolled my window down, and I said, I really screwed up. I'm really sorry. Is there any chance you can let me in? Because I just didn't know, whatever. And she's like, oh, yeah, sure, no problem.
Yeah, somebody
but if I would have gone up there and tried to just edge in, she probably wouldn't have let me in.
Yeah, she shouldn't. So,
But I was innocent in that.
I wouldn't have let you in.
I wasn't trying to be a jerk there. I was just, you know, dumb.
Yeah.
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 Let the dumb guy in, right?
Yeah, if you came up like, jerk. Hey, I'm sorry, I didn't see this here. You know, if you're clearly a dope, I'd be like, all right. But all if you're...
Well,
if you're...
it wasn't exactly like that, Mom.
But you can tell.
I don't really like the portrayal there.
If you're clearly
comfortable with that,
clearly a dunce, you know, then sure, we'll take sympathy on you, let you in. But yeah, if you're just the guy who's like, I'm not waiting this, I'm not a dummy. I'm like, well, you'll be the dummy behind me then.
You know, I might have snapped and just ran into the front of your car. That's what I would have done.
I'm telling you, moments like this morning make road rage seem very, very realistic. I get it.
Well, it's interesting how, you know, the dynamic that, like, when you're behind the wheel, you would never do that if you're, like, pedestrians, you know, walking or whatever. But you get in a car and, you know, you just feel...
You're protected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like some of the keyboard tough guys that you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. Keyboard strong. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by my new best friends in the world, hopefully soon, Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. And by the way, if you missed any of our conversation with Mike Blowers or any of our guests, all you need to do is head to seattlesports.com, click the podcast tab, and click on our picture, and it's right there waiting for you after the show each and every day. But what's the key to the whole thing, Thumb?
Well, hopefully they've already subscribed.
So that is the key, right?
I would say tell your friends to subscribe. So go past just that.
That's what we're doing right now. Yeah. We're telling our friends, subscribe.
Yeah.
Subscribe.
There you go. Subscribe is the key. All right, it is Friday, which means it's a Snoqualmie Casino Football Friday on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up, Jerry DePoto weighs in on Jesse Winker's future in Seattle. We'll let you hear what he had to say. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, you're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Friday, which means we'll do mean texts in the 5 o'clock hour. So you guys still have time to get creative, text in your shots. And again, keep them brief if you can. Some people, they want to get a little wordy with them. But that doesn't help, because often during the break, what happens is I'll read them to Dave and he'll go, wait, what? Read that again? What? And then we're trying to decipher what somebody meant.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to be too brief. Like, we need a little bit more words.
There's just one extreme or the other. There's either a book on tape, if I'm reading it to you, or it's one or two lines going, I'm not sure what they meant.
The other thing is, I think people maybe are listening, or can you pause the stream or no?
Not that I'm aware of.
I'm wondering if they're sometimes off as far as the, you know, the timing. It's like, no, that was this. And I'm like, we talked about that 2 hours
ago. Yeah, sometimes I'm going, I'll read a text today and go, what are they talking about? We talked about that at 2:05. I'm like, okay. So yeah, maybe they're listening on some sort of delay. I'm not sure how that works. But anyway, the text is there for you. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. So now you've got all your instructions. Go forth and be creative. We've got Greg Papa will join us, the voice of the San Francisco 49ers. He'll join us at 4 o'clock, little preview of the opponent coming your way, and then we'll do mean text in the 5 o'clock hour. Meanwhile, we talked to Blowers there just a bit ago and talked to him about all the guys that really haven't stepped up the way we thought they would. When we came into the season, we thought, okay, you're going to have Kelnick there, you're going to have Kyle Lewis there, you've got Mitch Haniger, you've got Winker coming over, you got Frazier, all these different bats and different people you thought would contribute. And they, you know, Kyle Lewis, injuries and everything, he's down in Tacoma. Mitch Haniger played 9 games, missed the majority of the season, is now back, but his back is bugging him. He's missed some time, so not a ton from him. Jesse Winker's really given you much of nothing this year. Jared Kelnick's given you nothing. J.P. Crawford has been very hot and cold, same with Frazier. So a lot of guys you were looking at going, okay, you got him, haven't really done it the way you'd hoped. And it's been, you know, Julio, it's been Geno Suarez, and then Mitch and Ty to a lesser extent, even though they've been struggling with injuries. But Winker is an interesting guy because he was the trade. He was the core of that trade with the Reds that brought Suarez over. And, you know, all-star last year, hit 24 home runs. I have to look up his numbers. But, yeah, so that the expectation was you're getting a young all-star in his prime. And that was the key to the deal, and it's been anything but a smooth transition for him. And Jerry DePoto talking about that, just talking about what a strange year it's been for him.
It has been, you know, a very slow season for Jesse, and and he knows it, and it's been a frustration for him. And at some point as a player, and it's been a battle for Jesse for a lot of the year. You know, he had a hot streak in the midsummer. And outside of that, it's been an atypical year for him, for a guy who's been an excellent major league hitter for a number of years. And my guess is he's going to show up next year and be an excellent major league hitter.
Man, I wonder what's going on with him, because, you know, even from his first year in the league, you're right, by the way, he had 24 home runs last year, his all-star year, but
hit 305 with a 394 on base.
I mean, it's amazing. And even, like I said, his rookie year, 298. Then 299, he didn't have a ton of plate, well, 137, but then 334 plate appearances the next year, 299, 269, 255. I mean, this is by far his worst year.
Yeah.
And so, and then, you know, you look at the strikeouts. I mean, he's at 94 already. The highest he's had is 75, and that was last year because, you know, he's a slugger. But, yeah, only you know, half as many home runs and half as many RBIs. So, yeah, it's just it's interesting to, you know, Jerry thinks that he's going to come back next year and, you know, be the guy that he's been in the past. But it sure is a drastic dip.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, drastic for a guy that, you know, you just go, hey, look, eventually he's going to come around. He just has to. And we were talking about that, I think, middle of the season, and he did there for a while, but it was kind of a short while.
Yeah, it's been a rough go. That's a guy, by the way, we talk about, you know, who's the shift going to benefit, and are we going to see a big change? And we'll all find out, but that would be a guy I would think would definitely benefit from the shift being gone.
Yeah.
You know, he is hit to that short right fielder a number of times. That's not the whole reason he's struggling, but, you know, it's been a wildly disappointing year for him. There's no two ways around it. And you look at it and go, yeah, he's done a great job in terms of his eye at the plate. He's got 79 walks on the year, but again, he's not a stolen base threat. He is not close to fast. So unless the guys behind him are driving him in, and he's only scored 45 runs. So that tells you how often when he's on base, he's coming around to score. It's not what you brought him here to do. He's not a leadoff hitter who, you know, right. You just want him to get on base and wreak havoc out there and be a pest for the pitcher and a stolen base threat. And you know, that on base is really crucial. I always bring up Vogelbach, where people would go, yeah, his average stinks. He hasn't come up with many hits, but look at his on base. The guy walks. I'm like, yeah, but nobody
doesn't do you any good, right?
Nobody wants that big guy standing on first base, because that's where he's just going to sit unless somebody can mash the ball behind him. You know, he's brought in to mash it. That's what Winker is supposed to do. And he's not a prototypical home run hitter. He hit 24 last year. So you're not looking at him the way you do Aaron Judge or somebody like that. But he's a guy who's got some pop and was expected to be that contact guy who's got almost a 400 on base, who's hitting over 300, and he's got some pop there. And you're just really not getting anything other than the walks. And more often than not, he's not scoring. He's not a stolen baser. He's not moving along.
Yeah, it's interesting. He started off 169, and I remember, you know, in the month of April, and we were thinking, okay, look, that at that point, you're thinking, okay, he's going to eventually get back to his average. Then 243 in May, and so that's when, you know, I think we all thought, all right, here we go.
He's starting to find it.
Right. And then 277 in June. So, yeah, that was good. But, boy, ever since then, it went 188 in July, 214 so far, or in August, and so far 120
oof,
in September.
Not
as far
good
as batting average goes. So, yeah, and the strikeouts also are really high right now for him for his career.
One more from Jerry, just talking about in this instance, there's no quick fix. He's just got to get back to having fun.
You know, and Jesse's worked really hard to try to figure it out. And he's had moments for us, for sure, where he's delivered, you know, again, you could cite an easy handful on how he's contributed to his team. But I think it's unrealistic to think that he's going to make an adjustment that solves this in a moment. It's just going to be letting go and having fun playing. And my guess is when that happens, you'll see the hits start pouring.
I hope he's right, man. You know, and that would be really cool, because right now they are having fun, especially yeah, if they go down and have success in this first, you know, of the road trip here down in Anaheim. This could really be like the spark that gets him. But it's funny, you know, Jerry's saying he needs to kind of relax and have fun, but everybody's having fun right now.
Yeah.
So maybe it'll catch on with him and he'll relax and think, hey, I want to be a big part of this, you know, historic run. And it is historic because it's been a couple decades. I'm sure he knows about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's probably putting a ton of pressure on himself. He knows he was the core of that trade, and maybe he feels the pressure of living up to that trade and, you know, who he was last year. And the more he doesn't succeed, the more it builds on him. Like, man, I got to get it going.
Then you press.
Yeah, and, so I could see it snowballing on him. But
the thing that's funny to me really quick, Bob, is that he's kind of the joker and the guy that keeps it light and kind of funny.
Seen that way.
And so... Yeah, I guess I don't really see that stress that Jerry's talking about, but I'm sure it's very real.
Yeah, hopefully, I mean, it'd be great if he found it before the playoff run. Like Jerry said, I don't know that there's an adjustment he's going to make right now, and all of a sudden, boom, he's just a new hitter up there, a new player. But it'd be just find some success. Have a couple balls drop out there where he's just sees some success. He's on base for something other than a walk, and maybe he can loosen up. He can breathe.
Seems like the fans love him. Everybody loved his participation in the brawl with the Angels.
Loved his interaction with the Mets fans and all of that. So, yeah, hopefully he gets it going. They need him. They need as many of these guys to come through as they can. Meanwhile, the Seahawks-Broncos game provided plenty of Wyman-worthy takes. We're going to hear those next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Tell me why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
We do it every week. Every single week. It's presented by Mazda of Everett. And
can I throw a new Why Man in? Mike, do you mind? Why?
I don't know if this is protocol, but okay.
Yeah. Why do the, Oscar Mayer
Lunchables.
People? Yeah, they're the Lunchables, but who's the company, the parent company here?
I don't know.
Anyway, they short you a cracker. The cracker to meat to cheese ratio is off.
By one.
They short you a cracker.
We already did What's Bugging, Bob/Dave.
All right, I'm just saying,
save it
why?
For
it
why,
seems consistent,
man?
Though. They're doing it intentionally.
Why, man?
I don't think you got a bad batch. It seems like that's their process. Maybe some people double up on the meat and cheese in one cracker, that way it evens out.
I don't think that's not an advantage. Like, it doesn't make it better, right? You were saying, like, the cracker to cheese to meat, I mean, it's a great little snack.
It's a great trifecta of deliciousness.
Who doesn't love that?
But
you don't need extra meat. It doesn't
American
need to
people.
Be yeah,
I don't know what they're doing.
It's like what do they say, gilding the lily?
Yeah,
you know
what was I remember that phrase? Like, what is that supposed to mean?
It's like a dressing it up too much.
Gilding
it's
all, the lily.
It's fine the way it is.
Huh.
Yeah, it's beautiful the way it is. You don't need to gild it.
Don't screw it up, man.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Why man? Why man? All right, Colin Cowherd, everybody's favorite, weighing in on the Seahawks Broncos and the fans booing. I guess implies that Seattle's an irrelevant sports city on some level is what he's thinking here.
Russell Wilson made Seattle relevant for a decade. In the 10 years he was the Seahawks quarterback, they were on national television 43 times. Like, only the Cowboys were on more. In the 10 years prior to that, 17 total, and mostly because of the other team. When you're from Seattle and you're tucked in the Pacific Northwest and it's cold and it's dark and it's miserably wet all winter long, you can't wait for the hydroplane races in July or August. You really celebrate the sun, celebrate those rare sunny days in February. I can't boo Russell Wilson because great is so rare in Seattle. You know, people say, well, he bailed on us. So did Boeing. So did the NBA. So did A-Rod. The Pacific Northwest is cold and wet and damp and geographically isolated. Very few people who are stars stay there forever.
I can't imagine anybody saying anything that would make people hate him more. I don't think he could say anything. I mean, he pretty much just covered everything to piss off Seattle fans. And you know what? I have to say, more and more and more, he sounds like Mark Rogers.
He I don't know what Mark like Rogers Russell. Sounds like. I wouldn't know him if he were sitting here.
I'm talking about what he says.
Oh.
You know, the things that he says. Yeah, it just... Well, wow. Text in how you feel about Colin Cowherd. I would think everybody would be done with Colin Cowherd now.
Yeah, if you weren't already. I mean, you know, he's said a lot of dumb things that have been, he's just been wrong a lot.
How many times has he been on either this or...
Well, he sustains this segment, basically. We wouldn't have a segment without him.
Yeah, pretty much. He's really the impetus behind this whole thing. Yes. He, along with Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith, it was the trifecta of dumb, really leading to this segment here. But, you know, part of what I agree with is you know, who Russell was for the team, and he brought a level of prominence to the team, but he was not alone. It's not like they had Russ and nobody else, and that's why they were on these primetime games. During that run, you had one of the all-time great defenses in NFL history, a generational defense. So it wasn't just Russ. It was the Legion of Boom with Cam and Sherm and Earl. It was Marshawn. It was Doug Baldwin. It was Pete Carroll. I mean, it was all-inclusive. Yeah, without any of those guys, you remove Russ from that situation. They don't get where they're to the Super Bowl and win. I'm sorry. I know for those that hate him right now and want to act like he'd had no role in anything and he was just along for the ride, it's inaccurate. But
yeah, I agree with that.
It was a collective. It wasn't you're on national TV because of Russ. That's inaccurate.
Well, the other thing too is he's pretty much just crapping on everybody, including the Seahawks organization. The Seahawks drafted him in the third round. And, you know, and look, I have no doubt that he would be a superstar no matter where he went. But he sure got into a great situation here his rookie year. Mm-hmm. It might have just started a little bit later if he was at another team.
Yeah.
Went to another team. I mean, he gave him an excellent defense, a really good running game. And, I mean, you gave him basically Marshawn Lynch and the Legion of Boom. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe it happens a little bit later for him. So him just crapping on, you know, the Seahawks and everybody else, you know, that to me, it was just an indictment on Seattleites just in general.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. What do you say about Colin? I guess
this one, like, you know, usually I don't get all fired up about that stuff. I'm like, whatever, you know, you can say whatever you want. But, and he's from here, right, Colin Cowherd?
He's from, yeah, I don't know exactly where, but
yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it just, wow. I would think everybody in Seattle who heard that would hate him. And yeah, not sports hate.
Legitimate hate.
Actual hate.
Here's a guy we spent some time talking about in the aftermath of that game, Broncos head coach Nathaniel Hackett, who rather than allowing the guy you paid $245 million to attempt a 4th-and-5 situation of which he's connected 57% of the time throughout his career, 4th down and between 4 and 6 yards, he opted to go with a kicker who's 1 for 8. On kicks 60 yards or more in his career. Went for a 64-yarder. Here he is defending that decision.
You know, looking back at it, we definitely should have gone for it. Just not, you know, one of those things. You look back at it and you say, of course we should go for it. We missed the field goal. But in that situation, we had a plan. I mean, we had a plan. We knew that the 46 was the mark. We were 3rd and 15, I think, 3rd and 13. I'm more upset about that play before it, to lose yards, to be able to, you know, getting that there would have definitely been better to be able to call that same play and get extra yards. But he dumps it out to Javonte. Javonte makes a move, goes a lot farther than I think we had anticipated. We were expecting to go for it on 4th down, and then you hit the mark.
Well, look, you know, it's kind of like the interception at the 1-yard line. It got intercepted. So, you know, you already start off, they missed the field goal. Mm-hmm. So there's that. You're never going to, you know, get away from that. But I think that the biggest mistake is that you should put the ball in the hands of your best player.
Yeah. And there was there wasn't second guessing there. It wasn't, oh, he missed. What a dumb decision. I think everybody, once they rolled out the kicker, and you went, wait, they're going to try to kick it from here? You're not letting, that was an immediate reaction. That wasn't an after the moment reaction.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I guess you would say they kind of did put the ball in the hands of, was Russell their best player in Super Bowl 49? Or was Marshawn Lynch?
Yeah. I don't know.
And, you know, remember that, the other thing. Nobody wants to hear this, but I think there was like 79 passes thrown on the 1-yard line or something like that. And that was the only one that year that got picked off.
Yeah, you're right. Nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah.
I think you're absolutely right. It's Friday, which means it's a Snoqualmie Casino Football Friday on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up, what is the mood around this San Francisco 49er team right now? Their broadcaster, the voice of the team, Greg Papa, will join us next. Give us a little preview. What's happening out there in San Francisco? That's coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.